Bonus edition of the pod. Too much going on. Everyone's screaming at each other about the playoff rankings. Ryan Day's future and an update on the love life of Sebastian the Ibis.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
I prefer if we just settled this by power slap.
Russ Dellinger.
Student athlete welfare, Pat.
And SI's Pat Forty.
I cannot believe you're putting this on a tee for Dan Wetzel like this.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, and it is a bonus pod, people. Bonus. College football cannot behave itself. So we have to step in. I wouldn't call it an emergency pod. I'd call it a bonus pod. They're arguing. They're fighting. They're casting side eyes. They're accusing each other of things. They're pulling out metrics. They're complaining about NIL. And so who else but to referee this than us? I want to start with what has turned into really a great thing for me, because I love college football and I love fighting. I prefer if we just settled this by power slap. But the idea that we had this the last couple of days since this committee put out its ranking, we had two athletic directors doing a smackdown on Twitter. We had Lane Kiffin just putting the entire committee on blast. We had statements from athletic directors, and we didn't even get to the wailing of all the fans. And that's for what I think is actually a college football season that is playing out with pretty good tranquility and order for the committee. Like, I think this is working perfectly. We have very minimal debates here. It's basically Alabama or Miami, unless Clemson upsets SMU in the ACC championship game, or I will contend UNLV upsets Boise State, but I know no one else wants to give Boise State the benefit of the doubt. But that is it. But to quickly recap, Jamie Pollard, the AD at Iowa State, came out and said, because the Big 12 is not getting a lot of respect, he said, disappointing that strength of schedule clearly does not matter for SMU, Indiana, and Boise State. Message is clear, win as many games as possible, regardless of who you play. Time to rethink non-conference scheduling. If you mess with the Cy-Hawk, Jamie, I'm coming after you, okay? Don't care about your playoff things. Rick Hart did not like the name check. Rick Hart is the AD at SMU. He fires back. Jamie, respect you, but bad take. Iowa State had North Dakota, Iowa, Arkansas State, non-conference. SMU had Nevada, HCU. What is that? I don't know. TCU.
Houston Christian. CVS drive-through stadium. Yeah.
Yeah, notice they tried to jam that in there with an initial no one knows. The CVS school.
Yeah.
I wonder if they have a good pharmacy program at HCU. TCU and BYU, and scrambled due to Vandy dropping us. SMU, one of two to win all conference games, one of three to play nine power. These things get like hostage, those hostage messages where they take the newspaper clips.
Just
I don't even want to know. Yeah. Jamie Pollard comes back. Oh, he goes, Rick Hart goes, I could go on, stay off my lawn, exclamation point. He throws that at Jamie Pollard, stay off my lawn. Jamie Pollard continuing to escalate. Rick, beat Clemson Saturday, and I respect your ranking. Until then, you did not play Clemson, Miami, Georgia Tech, or Syracuse, and lost to BYU at home. Looks like your lawn may be artificial.
Low blows.
Quite a line.
As somebody who loves taking care of his lawn, Jamie Pollard is not playing fair. If I'm Rick Hart, I see Jamie Pollard in the street, there's going to be a fight. You don't say that about a man's lawn. Lawn may be artificial. Later, Lane Kiffin just goes off, or this was maybe earlier today. This is to the college football playoff people. You guys actually meet for days and come up with these rankings? Double question mark. Ooh. Do you actually watch the quality of players, teams, and road environments? We played in one of yours this year. I guess it's about the ACC. Or try to make the ACC feel relevant. By the way, one of your teams paid us not to play again next year. He goes on, including a number of ACC smacks. Rewatch UGA Clemson closely if you want a reminder of the two conferences. Hashtag spot the ball anywhere at ACF, ACC football. And then hashtag remember take a knee. Direct shot at Miami and Mario Cristobal. Pat?
You know what? I did not pick up on that being the shot. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my. Yeah. So, many thoughts here, of course.
We've lost our marbles.
It was just incredible. Yeah, totally. Hence the bonus pod. What are we doing? Because everyone has lost their marbles. I'm going to go first on Kiffin. I wrote a column about this because it's just unbelievable to me. Our man Lane Kiffin just went straight Veruca Salt, the spoiled girl from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, entitled The Entitlement of the SEC. They just got a spot handed to them controversially, but it's not enough. They want more. Got to have more. Got to take more shots at the ACC, which just got screwed here. And Lane going on the road environments here. Okay, the road environments. Well, how did Miami handle the swamp? Beat the crap out of Florida in the swamp, where Ole Miss lost, by the way. How did Louisville handle going to Lexington? Beat the crap out of Kentucky. How did 14th place ACC finisher Cal handle going on the plains to Auburn? Won the game. You can talk about these road environments, and Kirby Smart did this too, and it's part of the SEC myth-making here is, and nobody understands how tough it is to win in these environments. You just don't understand. You just don't understand, blah, 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 blah. Well, the winning percentage of home teams in the SEC this season is, I'm getting it here from the column, 0.574. The winning percentage for home teams in the ACC this season is 0.567, a virtual wash. So it must be pretty damn hard to play on the road in the ACC too, Lane. It's just unbelievable. Although, by the way, also, Lane, if the road environments are so hard, how come 4-8 Kentucky went into your stadium and beat you? Might need to work on your own home environment a little bit there.
What's weird to me about the Lane stuff is he's going after the ACC when really he should be going after Alabama.
Yeah.
In comparing their resume to Alabama, because he would have a better point probably if you look at the resume and kind of schedule comparing Alabama and Ole Miss. It's interesting. And I think Charlie Weiss Jr., I believe, which on the Ole Miss staff, actually tweeted later on, wondering why Alabama is so far ahead of Ole Miss. And that should probably be the focus. It's Alabama that's in, not Miami, not the ACC. And so the Alabama Ole Miss resume comparison is a pretty interesting one. But you know what? All these teams, this was not the case with the 14 playoff when we had the fifth and sixth team miss the playoff. Like all these teams that are 12, 13, 14, 15, they all have somewhere where they have a flaw and they could have just won a game, like a home game against Kentucky for Ole Miss, right? Or Alabama, a road game against really bad Oklahoma. So there's been something, you know, Miami. Right, you were up 21-0 at Syracuse, so you got a point to all these things, but you know we knew we'd be here, right? We said if you expand to 12, your 13th team is going to be yelling and screaming. If you expand to 16, the 17th team is going to be yelling and screaming. At the NCAA tournament, what do you have? 36 at large or 38 at large? You know the next team out is going to be complaining. There you go.
100% true. The complaining will be right up there on the bubble of whoever gets left out. And the good news is with the 12-team playoff, you're not leaving out a potential national champion. I'm sorry, Miami. I'm sorry, Mississippi. I'm sorry, South Carolina.
That is a great point. Bill Hancock, of the former CFP executive director, I was talking to him, this is a couple of weeks ago, for a story, and he asked me, he said, Ross, are there really 12 teams that could win a national championship, and or at least that deserved to compete for a national championship? Miami lost at Syracuse and at Georgia Tech. As we just said, Ole Miss lost in Alabama, both lost three times this season. So I don't know that anybody is worthy enough or deserves to compete for a national championship. That's outside, if you look at it and look at the rankings and the schedules, 6 to 8 teams, maybe something like that. So you're talking about a team that in all likelihood is going to lose in the first round, and if not, the second round.
Yeah, no doubt. I've never bought that. I've always argued against that deserved. Now, that was kind of a way college football looked at it, because it's supposed to be fun, not deserved. I don't know who the hell deserves the chance. Texas is 11-1. They have like one good win, maybe. Did they beat any? Do they have a victory over any ranked team? I don't think they do.
Texas A&M, did Texas A&M drop all the way out?
Dropped out.
They did. Then you're right. So then
they
don't
deserve it. I don't know. Penn State, they have what? A victory over Illinois? Georgia, it's got two losses. Like, what's deserved? So I always rejected that thing, but that's fine. But this is the point. 12 is the perfect number, and please do not expand this damn thing. These people that are arguing,
Just wait.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
But this is how they ruin the game, because they are reactionary and they listen to coaches. They listen to their angry, aggrieved head football coach who never's wrong about anything and cries about everything being unfair and is the exact opposite of everything they try to preach about dealing with adversity. So they're whining and screaming and pouting. Is Ole Miss deserve it over Alabama? Maybe, maybe not. Depends what you got to make a choice. We have 11 teams here that are in right now, and somebody's got to make a call on the one out of the final three or four teams. So they pick Alabama. I can't, if the criteria they like is how many good teams did you beat, opposed to how quality is your loss or whatever, that's fine. But like Ross said, all these teams had something to do. This is why I continue to praise Tennessee. Tennessee had their hiccup game. They had their mulligan. They lost to Arkansas. And then they took care of business. And they didn't crush Kentucky, but they beat them. They didn't crush Florida. They beat them in overtime. They won it. They didn't crush Vanderbilt. They were trailing, but they won it. So all credit to the Vols. That's why they're sitting in there safe as can be, while all the other SEC teams are screaming at each other on social media and politicking and all that. Take care of your business. 12 is perfect. It's just the right angst. And these teams, they all have a reason why they might be out. So I'm not going to argue this Ole Miss is better than this. If Lane wanted to make a real argument here, he'd be better off arguing that Indiana doesn't deserve to get in because they didn't play anybody. So I don't know what his deal with the ACC is when there's only one ACC team into it, and there has to be one. So, like, what do you want him to do? Is he already angry that Clemson might make it two? It wouldn't affect you. I the whole thing is a little off, but whatever. It's content. It's content. Yell at each other.
Yeah.
But
SEC versus ACC, baby.
The ACC is getting getting favored here. They're like, wait, what? Alabama's the second straight year.
Right.
Come on.
Again, yes. The SEC playing the aggrieved party here is just hilarious. I mean, it's like you're getting 3/7 of the at-large biz. That's not enough, Lane. Come on, man. Can I please also just touch on this for Jamie Pollard? Jamie Pollard, who's killing the SMU schedule. Which ranked teams did Jamie's team beat? They didn't play BYU. They didn't play Colorado. They haven't played Arizona State until they will Saturday. They played Iowa non-conference, but as Rick Hart pointed out, SMU played TCU and BYU non-conference. I just where are these guys coming up with this stuff?
Everybody's got, this is it. Like everyone's got their flaw, except Oregon. Other than that, I don't want to hear from you. Line them up, we beat them all. We deserve it.
Yeah.
Maybe they already deserve it. I mean, we have rematches in title, most of these title games, conference title games. The team already won the league, rightfully. So when they expand this thing because head coaches who cannot accept any reality in their world and are horrible at anything other than their own self-interests and can't factor anything other than their self-interests in, that's when they hurt college football. Anytime you're listening to the coaches, but that's who the establishment listens to, and then they listen to the old coaches on TV, and their perspective is not they don't know anything about economics, they don't know anything about logic or philosophy or different theories or gameplay or all the different stuff. They just know about, I'm not getting what I want, so I'm going to pout. And it's like, we need more teams.
And they want their conference to get more teams in. They have no interest in a broad-based competitive enterprise.
Right.
They want more of what's good for them.
Some new Lane Kiffin quotes. I don't know if he talked more. Yeah. This is from Michael Katz, who covers Ole Miss there in Oxford. And I don't know where these are from, but he was asked about parity, I guess, in the SEC. Stop me if these are old quotes that we've already talked about, Pat, but he says, he was asked about revenue share and how that could bring parity. He says, I think that's why you're probably going to have to get used to, as fans, teams having multiple losses in the conference. It's why it's just different. It's just totally different in these comparisons to the conferences in the ACC and the Big 12. You might as well be in different leagues, not conferences, different leagues. Like, here's the NFL, then here's the SEC, and here's these other Big 10 teams, and then here's everybody else.
It's new.
So Lane Kiffin is calling for the Super League. It sounds like the 30-team Super League. How about
that? There you go. And the SEC is so damn tough that you can lose to Kentucky, which got flattened on its home field by Louisville from the ACC.
I'm going to get to this later, but can I just take a moment that now they're complaining that collectives and NIL and the transfer portal is creating too much parity, when 4 years ago they were screaming that only Alabama would get all the players? We now have head coaches saying that what they once warned was going to ruin competitive balance is now creating too much competitive balance. If you had listened to them 4 years ago, you would have thought one thing that demonstrably is not true. Just had to bring that up. I can't get over it.
That's good. Bring it up.
One issue this weekend. Otherwise, if everybody favored wins, we're playoff is set. They can shuffle some teams around. You know, where does Penn State? If they lose, do they drop? Whatever. If Clemson wins, or Boise State wins, if both win, then or if UNLV wins and Clemson wins, then we have this situation of the conference championship game knocking a team out. Now, I have been arguing this philosophy for a while, and it is one of my least popular ones that I've argued. But now people are starting to talk about it, so I'm getting excited. After 12 games, the field should be set. You should not be able to, not necessarily set, because we don't know if Arizona State or Iowa State or like Clemson has the right to jump in, but you should not be able to leapfrog a team if you're sitting at home on championship weekend. The team, if you think after 12 games, these are the teams that are in, then those teams should be in. And you don't get credit for staying at home. Now, the committee has completely rejected that through the years. And so don't worry. I expect they probably will again. But there's a little bit more of a discussion, certainly in SMU, but I would say if you think Boise State is better than Alabama after 12 games, and the committee does, then Boise State shouldn't have to play another game to prove it again when Alabama doesn't have to. So if you're sitting at home, you don't get in if you're out. But that's my theory. I've been arguing it for years. But what it has brought up is, and Ross, you wrote about it very well and reported it out today, what does that mean for the future of conference championship games? What is the use of SMU playing in a conference championship game when they might get knocked out? And Lane Kiffin, who we love, Lane, giving you a hard time today, but we love a lot of your opinions. He says coaches don't want to be in the SEC championship game. I would say if SMU would be probably quite happy if there was not an ACC championship game, because they have come from the American and come all the way in and are going to be in this playoff. They were left for dead last year, and here they are in the playoff. So how does this play into what would be the future of conference championship games when we continue to have it? What is the status, Ross?
Well, you know, this is something that's was talked about 5 years ago when they were building and crafting this format, the subcommittee that got together of commissioners to create this format. And I think it was Jack Swarbrick who was on that subcommittee, told everybody in the room while they were creating this, conference championship games are not going to last in this format. You're going to have to get rid of them eventually. And whether that happens in 8 years or 4 years or whenever, you're going to have to get rid of them because, number one, the value in them goes down. I mean, let's take this weekend, right? Imagine this weekend in a 14 playoff. Right. I mean, it's basically just a quarterfinal. Right. It's the way it's been conference champion. They're basically a quarterfinal into the playoff for the most part. Look at this weekend. You've got four power conference championship games and you have one. Right. That is a definite elimination game where the winner gets in and the loser is out in the Big 12. And you got one that's kind of in between, right, in the ACC, as we discussed. And then you got two that only reason these teams are playing, basically, is to get the first round bye, and that's in the Big Ten in the SEC. So that's number one. It lowers the meaning, I think, a little bit. But number two, think about, and this is what Lane Kiffin kind of, I think, was getting at when he said coaches really don't want to play these, is the reward of getting just the bye isn't enough when you risk injuries and all this other things that could happen in a game, playing a full game against a highly ranked team before an onslaught of a month of playoff games to play an extra game. So the risk reward is not there. And then the third thing, Dan, is the calendar, which actually really is the most important thing in all this. And I'm guessing in 10 years, we're going to sit here and be talking about how the regular season of college football is moved up a week, or either conference championship games are eliminated, because they need that second weekend of December. They need to play the first round on that weekend in order to stagger things to where the semifinals are back on New Year's Day and they don't bleed into January too far with the championship game in the NFL playoffs like they are now. So the championship game would also free up the calendar. So for all of those reasons, right, there is talk. I would venture to say half, you know, maybe a little more than half, maybe six of the 10 conferences or so believe that, you know, maybe we should phase out the championship game. But there are positives of this, right? I mean, and one of the big ones that SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey's brought up plenty of times to me is, do you want to determine a champion off of a tiebreaker, right? You need to settle it on the field. And we've seen the mess this year with tiebreakers. I mean, shit, you know, we kind of gloss over it. How about Penn State and Indiana? Penn State is going to the Big Ten championship game by like minuscule percentages of like tens of percentages based on their conference schedule being a little more difficult than Indiana's. So the Big 12, we talked about this before, they have a four-way tie where the best team probably with the best resume, BYU, is not even in the championship game. So do you want to determine a champion through a tiebreaker instead of on the field. And then, of course, there's money, Dan, right? The Big Ten and SEC championship games are worth well into $40, $60, $80 million value. So that would have to be made up. And it can, that have to be made up in an additional playoff game, expanding the playoffs further, which you could really only expand the playoffs further if you got rid of the championship games. So to bring it all back, to wrap it all up, is this weekend, you know, SMU, and that's what I led the story with, is SMU, because they're kind of at the center of all this, is Ward Manuel, the CFP chair, open the door to for SMU to potentially, the, according to his comments, drop out of the playoff field when they are currently in the playoff field if they lose to Clemson? And so, as Rhett Lashley told me, the coach at SMU, then why play? Why play in the game? Why would we want to play if we're going to be penalized for playing?
Yeah, I thought they needed to change the calendar to avoid conflicting with finals. Yeah, academic calendar. Oh,
that's
very
right.
Important. Yeah.
Student athlete welfare, Pat.
What is that? Yeah. Very concerned about those things. Very
they're getting paid, as one college leader told me. Yeah. You guys would love this. Well, they're getting paid now, so we're not hearing as much about the student athlete welfare.
About that.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The days of every AD starting everything he's saying by everything we do is predicated on what's good for the student athletes and helping our student athletes. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. No, Ross's points are all great there because I think you drill down on the tension points and the problems and the potential ramifications. If the problem, the biggest problem, like I've always hated conference championship games, or at least for 20 years. But the problem with doing away with them is exactly what you said of it's already hard enough to decide who your champion is in a league that's way too big. And now, if you take away a settle it on the field game, you are then turning it over to the fourth tiebreaker and who played whom in your overlarge conference and what their winning percentage was versus this other team's. And that's not a satisfactory way to crown a champion. But that's what they've signed up for. That's when all of a sudden we have to have an 18-team Big Ten and a 16-team SEC and a 17-team ACC and a 16-team Big 12, you are asking for trouble. You have completely imbalanced schedules. You have not enough crossover games. You have no divisions anymore either. And so deciding who your champion is becomes more and more of a math trick based on luck of the draw. So that's the issue there. If you can possibly, you know, maybe you could do this and say the SEC and the ACC, you could add another conference game. And then you at least get a little more body of work against each other. But still, this is a difficult situation. That and the $40 to $60 million you get for putting on your game are the stepping points.
A few things here. Yeah, it was like a couple of years ago, I argued USC should have said, in 2022, they should have said they had COVID, skipped the game against Utah. They were going to be in the playoff. Instead, they played Utah, lost. And Ohio State jumped them, right? That was back when the COVID excuse was. If you want to make this weekend matter, and these issues pounce all over the place. I'm not arguing one side or the other, really. If you want to make these games matter, make the quarterfinals home games, not bowl games. Then being the one seed or the two seed or the three or four matters a ton. Because right now, Oregon wins this thing and they play the exact same number. Okay, they have to play this weekend. So they're playing a 13th game. If we held the things right now, it's Tennessee versus Ohio State in 9-8. Those two have played 12. They will play a 13th game. Equal number of games, equal number of opportunities. And Oregon's benefit, the reward for being the number one seed is you have to face either Ohio State or Tennessee on a neutral field. That sucks. They didn't get one. We got a bye. You don't get a bye. You have to play. You didn't get a bye. You have to play. They are risking the same amount of injuries. Yeah, they have a little bit more off time, but we're talking 2 weeks between these games. It's not, it's, you know, yes, there could be injury, but you could have injury. So you have to get rid of the stupid quarterfinals at bowl sites. if you want to make these things matter. This will become readily apparent as this plays out and everyone goes, what the heck? This weekend, actually, more championship games matter than most years. I used to do this column. A lot of the years, it didn't matter who even won. You could lose your championship game and still get in. The Mountain West, the Big 12, and the ACC matter. It's the first time anyone's going to... When was the last time you wanted to watch those three? Okay, been a while.
Every year, we'll have a G5, you know.
Yeah, I bet you 5 million people will watch.
We'll never watch, but
right. Yeah. 5 million people, I bet, will watch Friday night Mountain West championship game. That is will be the largest television audience for a Mountain West game ever. And it'll be because the average person, will just average college football fan, is like, okay, one of these two teams is in. I'm going to watch. Everyone in the state of Alabama will be watching Clemson against SMU because they're going to be rooting for SMU.
Yes, right? They will.
So there actually is more. And as much as the SEC and Big Ten make money, these games for the conferences that do not have a steady stream of games that get 5-8 million viewers become even more valuable, right? Because where else can the Big 12 say, hey, when we're renegotiating or we're negotiating a deal, look, you're going to get our championship game that is routinely getting 8 million people to watch. Well, they don't have Ohio State versus Michigan. They don't have LSU versus Alabama, right? So they can't just get those TVs. So there's that. Settle on the field, I agree. But like Georgia already beat Texas. Most of these things, somebody already won. They want their cake and eat it too. They want to be this nostalgic, we got to prove who won the old conference like when I played or the old style. You already told us these conferences are garbage. They mean nothing. They're just television grabs. This is not a conference. The SEC, I will give some credit to. They have, generally speaking, held a cultural and geographic consistency. But the rest of them, this is a joke. Okay? It's a joke. None of these things are anything like it. And we're going to have we could have all four conferences be won by a new team in the league this year. Oregon could win the Big Ten. They were in the Pac-12. Arizona State can win the Big 12. They were in the Pac-12. Texas can win the SEC. They were in the Big 12. And SMU, which is the American, can win the AAC. That's what Joey McGuire of Texas Tech was saying. So those are my basic things. Also, Indiana, I guess what we're talking about, SMU wishing they weren't in. Indiana's glad they're not in because they'd be sitting very precarious. They would be the team that could get thrown out and lose their bid. They're getting, because they're behind SMU, right? They're 10. They're the team
very happy they're not.
If they're playing Oregon, an Oregon team,
nine.
They're nine. Right? Oh yeah, Boise's 10.
Oh, 10 seed. Well, I'm sorry. Nine ranking.
Even more than SMU, they're behind SMU in the seedings and the rankings and everything. So Indiana's catching the break. That not winning that little tiebreaker. Not bad.
Yeah.
Hoosiers are in.
Yeah.
So.
Dan, did you guys see, it was in my story, do you guys see the ticket get-in price for the Big Ten championship game?
Yeah.
$12. It's $12. And I was talking to somebody about that earlier this morning, and they said, Ross, this is going to be every year. You're going to see game, even the SEC's at $120 to get in. Now, that's a big difference. I get it. But last year, the SEC's $350 to get in.
Georgia, and now, they got Georgia in it.
They got Georgia and Texas in it for the first year. People are not going to – I had somebody in from a conference office tell me this earlier today. People are not going to travel to conference championship games when they know their team is already in and they're going to have to travel potentially to a quarter, to a semi, down the road, which is why when – going back to your point, Dan, I think it's a very good one. The quarterfinals being on campus will help out certainly at least one fan base when it comes to that travel expense.
That's a very key point. There is you the fans don't have an unlimited travel budget.
Now the Bulls, Dan, the Bulls, your friends over at the Bulls, and they're very nice people. I love the Bull people, right? We all love the Bull people to an extent. We do
free cocktails,
but they will tell you that the weather, right, two, not just one, but now two home games in a northern climate or whatever. The weather's going to be an issue, right? What the issue? Traffic in a small college town, the hotels, issue? All of this stuff. No, it's going to be
a good issue.
A bad issue.
Why?
It's going to be a bad issue.
Weather is football weather. You ever seen a game in Green Bay?
I cannot believe you're putting this on a tee for Dan Wetzel like this.
Come on.
Holy Come on. Crap.
I know. I'm not agreeing with them. Just giving,
how do they
sir,
how do we survive here in the north? Oh, my God. How in the world here on the side of K2 could we possibly live?
The bold people who are listening, I tried.
Here on the side of
Come
K2.
On, the weather?
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, it's better. It's better. There's going to be football weather. All weather is football weather. That's the beauty of the sport. It's not baseball. It's not basketball. We play it. Let's go. It's raining. It's windy. It's whatever. It's cold. It's hot. I don't care. Play it.
And also the traffic in a small town? Like, isn't that what they do all fall?
Right? I don't want traffic.
Isn't it hard to get into Clemson every home weekend?
Well,
hard to get into State College.
Dude, these guys
every
are out of
weekend?
Arguments. They always make that argument.
Another argument is in a quarterfinal, you know, shouldn't you be at a neutral site for a quarterfinal to give everybody a fair shot? Now, I'm not saying, again, I don't necessarily agree with that. And what you said fair in your shot. Point, the reward for a conference championship game. Champion should be more than just a bye. It should be a bye, and you host the game. I think that is a great idea.
I'm guessing that
they'll think about doing that down the line.
The sanctity of the regular season. Oh, I heard all that wailing. Listen, man, I wrote two books. I got all the arguments. I heard them all. Weather. Oh, my God. How will we survive? My favorite was what happens if – okay, they literally said this to the media. The media, because they're trying to get us on the bowl side. What would happen if Kansas State hosts a playoff game? I'm like, that'd be awesome. I'm sorry, that'd be awesome.
Oh, right.
The greatest thing to ever happen. Yeah. It'd be awesome. Yeah. Where would you stay? There aren't enough hotel rooms. We wouldn't have hospitality suites. You got to be there. I'm like, you stay in Kansas City and drive there? Like what? Like, is it impossible to get to this place? when I cover NFL playoff games in Green Bay, you can't stay in Green Bay. You have to stay in Milwaukee or Appleton or whatever. No. Somehow, some way, the media, like you really care about the media. We got to drive. Oh my God. Like that's your concern. That's what's holding this all up. Your concern over whether I might have to drive an hour and a half. We can't stay in these towns anyway during the regular season because they cost too much.
That's the thing. What's the difference between the regular season games in Manhattan, Kansas, and Starkville and Clemson
State
and Auburn?
College.
No, we never
$700
can't stay in any of them.
Right. No. So we don't stay. We drive and drive. It's like, oh, my, that's really what's holding this up is your concern over whether I have a hospitality room. I don't think that's what it is. I don't know.
Well, and the CFP, you know, CFP does have, they're going to allot blocks of rooms nearby for reporters, for media, I've heard. So they will have, not maybe right in the college town, but pretty close. They're going to have that for us at least.
It'll work out. It'll work out.
I mean, they can actually use us as consultants for where you stay in these towns because we have to do it all the damn time.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay? Right. There's a little Fairfield Inn in Altoona.
Keystone Crossing Marriott north of Indianapolis is just fine for getting to South Bend.
Columbus, Georgia. Yeah, there's all the little places. We know them all. Come on. Yeah. Unbelievable. All right, we got to go to break. This is what happens. We have a bonus. Our first section.
We go completely nuts.
All right, we'll be back right after this. All right, other big topic that it continues to burn is Ryan Day, Ohio State Buckeye coach. And he had his signing day press conference on Wednesday. Credit to Ryan Day. Stood there for over an hour and answered every possible question. Not just about, it was parts of it were about the recruiting class. Buckeyes had a very good recruiting class, but as they usually do. But also anything about Michigan game, his future, his emotional state, his mental state, you name it, they asked it. The run game, why didn't they run it more times? What, the kicking game? He answered it all. Credit to Ryan Day. But consistently. He said, look, I don't know what he said. He expects to be back next year. He's trying to turn the page. They got a chance to win the national title. He does not want to leave, as some speculation has been. Quote, this is a wonderful place. I have a great job, one of the best jobs in America. It's a challenge at times. I'm disappointed about this more than anyone else. It crushes me. He kept going back to that. There's no way to defend losing 4 years in a row, but I know we're going to play as hard as we can in the playoffs. We're right there. We just got to keep swinging at it, on and on and on. But there has been unbelievable blowback, former players and lots of media, and the media that doesn't get into stuff. Fascinatingly, today I texted with two different NBA coaches, NBA, about Ryan Day. They wanted to know what was up with Ryan Day. And they are college football fans, but I think the Ryan Day situation, like, transcends the coaching by sport. Like, they're all fascinated, like, this weird dynamic. So you got guys coaching in the NBA. They're busy. They play a lot of games in the NBA, if you didn't know. And they're like, what do you think's up with this Ryan? They fire him? Can he come back? Like, it is fascinating dynamic. So, Pat, where you stand now that the dust is a little settled after the Michigan debacle?
Yeah, that's interesting. I had a college basketball coach reach out on the same topic, and then another college football coach had the same discussions. You know, I think with a couple days to calm the waters, as you said, I don't think Ohio State wants to fire Ryan Day. I don't. I don't think Ross Bjork is ready to go there. We'll see about Day. If he's everybody says what they need to say right now, first of all, it's like nobody get. I mean, Ross Bjork can say, yeah, his job's on the line, and Ryan Day can say, you know, I'd kind of like to leave. Everybody is staying with the status quo for as long as the status quo exists, and then we'll see for sure. My guess is that I don't think Ohio State will fire him. Now, if they absolutely lay a first-round egg, that could change. I'm not convinced 100% that Ryan Day really is going to sit there, and if he's got somewhere to go, somewhere where you can get paid a lot and you can win, I'm not convinced that he's going to say, I'm going to stay here at Ohio State. There are a million people that would want that job, clearly, and a lot of them with Ohio State ties, alums who could be really attractive candidates. And then beyond that, who knows? Who's to say that a Dan Lanning, an absolute superstar, might not be interested? I don't think he would leave Oregon for there, but I think everyone would listen if Ohio State says, you want to coach here? Everyone. I think it is all going to be TBD. How far do they go? How bad does it get if they lose? And then we reassess. So, nothing that anybody says on December 4th to me defines the situation.
I don't think they want to fire him in, you know, the pool of coaches right now. Just, we have two coaches. This is crazy. Maybe I said this in the pod earlier, but we have two active coaches that have won a national championship. Two right now. That's it. And the pool is a little shallow, I think, especially for some of these big jobs. That's what you hear from agents and from administrators. So I really don't think they want to have a coaching search right now. And then you have the buyout, which is, I think, 35 to 40 million-ish, somewhere around
37
there.
37 million, USA
Today. 37, yeah. And so that's a lot of money. And I know Ohio State has a lot of money, but when you are about to try to come up with $25 million a year, for the next few years for athlete revenue sharing, it gets even tougher. So I don't think they want to do that. But I'm kind of with Pat. You know, does he leave at some point? I don't know what could come open for him in the college ranks. I don't see anything coming open. But you never know, right? What could come open maybe in the NFL or if the NFL plucks, you know, some coach in college and maybe opens up a big job that he could potentially move to. But he sounded today like a coach who's all in with Ohio State and continue to go. But there's no doubt that he needs to win maybe a couple games in the playoff to kind of ease the pressure a little bit.
Yeah, the Vols go win 28-7. He ain't gonna wanna be there.
Mm-mm.
Or they win whatever, 35-34, if that's the game that plays out. We'll see. But
I would say that if the Ohio State home game, if they get a home game, and if it starts out the way their game against Indiana did, oh God.
Yeah,
because if they did not start well in that game, that will be the most toxic place on earth. So they not just need to win. To win, I think they need to start well, but that's down the road.
Yeah, they that's down the road. But if he loses, I don't know how it just talking to the NBA guys, it's like there's times with really good NBA coaches, it just like comes to an end for a coach.
Right.
Yep. Like you have a few guys who stay, Popovich or Kerr, they stay at the same, but you could have a really good coach and it's just like, yeah, it was a good run here, but it's over. And I think Ryan Day needs a big time December. The other thing we talked about was, and I thought this was interesting here in this perspective was, and we talked about how much Ryan Day kind of plays to the base of the Ohio State fan base and the whole, this matters more to me than anybody. And in ways he would say, and he said it like, we shouldn't lose to Michigan. We should win the Big Ten and we should win national titles. And when you say it can't happen, it'll never happen again. We shouldn't lose to Michigan. In a way, you're disrespecting your opponent. I know that's not quite what he's trying to do, but you shouldn't ever go in thinking we should always beat anybody. They shouldn't always beat Bowling Green. Like if you play them 100 times, maybe one time, Bowling Green's going to get you. But like it's kind of disrespectful. But what it does is it trains your fan base to assume that if you do lose, then it is cataclysmic. And I think Ryan Day believed that he should never lose to Michigan. I think it played a role in why when Michigan was beating them and then the Connor Stallions came out, he just assumed, well, they were cheating. That was the only reason we lost. It wasn't Aiden Hutchinson. It wasn't Hassan Haskins. It wasn't these other things. Michigan's not worthy to beat us. And it's like flipped it where I think there was more respect under the Tressel, even Woody Hayes era, where it's like, that's also a great program. Or you get a better respect when Alabama and Georgia play or at these schools. It's not, we have to win. Because what Michigan had a team that was very, very good the last 4 years, not this year, but the other three. And they had a ton of NFL players. And I know everyone bagged on Jim Harbaugh because he's odd. And he's, you know, he was great for us for content, but he said a lot of weird things. But Jim Harbaugh is a great football coach. Okay. And they almost beat Ohio State a couple times. They didn't, whatever. People are like, he's terrible. He's the most overrated coach, overpaid, all of that. Fine. He wanted San Diego, 1AA non-scholarship. He wanted Stanford, turned him into a top 10 team. He went to the Super Bowl with the 49ers with Colin Kaepernick as his quarterback. Look at him at the Chargers right now. They're winning. Like yeah, this is a this is an excellent football coach. And Ryan Day, who did not have that track record, was like, that guy can't beat me. They can't beat us. And I think it just permeated down to where these fans are now like, it must be Ryan Day's fault because we can't lose to them. Instead of like, and a respect for the opponent, like I remember covering a Florida State Miami game when this thing was really popping. That rivalry was like knife to the throat kind of rivalry. And Florida State won at Miami. And Bobby Bowden after was like, hey, this is unbelievable. It's really hard to beat these guys down here. There was a real humbleness in the way he spoke about Miami, as much as they hated Miami, about like, this was an accomplishment. And I think he would do really well if he does return to dial back to a little bit of like, hey, they got a good program up there also.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's poor strategy for yourself. You're setting yourself up. You know, if we can't beat them, it must be your fault then, dude. You know, coaches, there's a reason Lou Holtz made every opponent sound like they were great, so that just in case they lost to him, everybody didn't say you're a terrible coach. You know, so it's just a kind of counter coaching 101, or at least the way it used to be. And I did have, I have somebody who's really well versed on Ohio State I was talking to Monday, and he hadn't listened to our podcast, but what he said echoed what you said Sunday, Dan. I hate to give you credit.
Well,
but
this must be a very wise man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it was, he's, your point about it being almost performative, where it's like he's so eaten up with trying to, you know, match the toughness of Michigan, or we are tough, and, you know, and this whole thing, and that kind of plays into what you're saying of, well, where we have to be better than them. We are better than them. And it's like, just coach the games and try to win the games. And then afterwards you can say, yeah, you know what? We were better than Michigan. But this insistence that they're on a different level from Michigan is unwise, that at the very least.
All right, let's go to break. We will be back after this. All right, we want to finish with an update on a story we did last time, and that was Sebastian the Ibis, the Miami Hurricane mascot, who was called out by television reporter Ashley Wenskowski, who works as a television reporter in Central New York for CNY. And she was at the Miami-Syracuse game in Syracuse and sent out on social media, Sebastian the Ibis just kneeled down and asked for my number mid-drive. Feels like he has bigger things to worry about with his team on the ropes in the fourth quarter of the Dome, but who am I to say? So, you know, of course, we people's courted, should a mascot be asking out television reporters during the game? Obviously, he got snubbed on that one. Didn't work out so well for him. Ashley was not impressed with Ibis, even though he's a pretty good mascot. But turns out there's more to the story. Ibis has popped out some photos on social media today. He later said they do anything for clout, kind of smacking back at Ashley. But joke is now on Ibis. Turns out, and I apologize for not knowing all of my mascot relationships. Ibis has a girlfriend. Gertrude the Ibis. Who is nicknamed Gigi.
You need a nickname when your name is Gertrude.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, mascots are old, right? Mascots are old.
Yeah, yeah.
Gigi the mascot. And, yeah, Gertrude. he has a mascot. And so Ibis, Sebastian the Ibis, put out on social media 4 pictures of him and Gigi. Posing for pictures. It says, take it from the source. This bird is taken. Lock emoji. Gigi, also known as Gertrude the Ibis, is the only one for me. P.S. I don't talk, with a wink emoji. Hashtag birds of a feather.
I think the I don't talk was another fire back at our TV reporter. Like, yeah. I couldn't have asked you out if I don't talk.
Sebastian, yeah. What are you doing, man? It's not Ashley's fault for talking. It's your fault for getting on knees asking for her number. Yeah. What about Gigi?
Ashley on the pod, I think, you know? Get it. I got some questions for this Ashley.
I'd rather hear
feeling right now.
I'd rather hear what Gigi's got to say.
Gigi? Yeah, maybe
so. Ashley, I mean, Sebastian was trying to step out on Gigi.
Yeah. He got cold busted on international media, social media.
These pictures are there. He's trying to, it's a love affair. It's a love affair. So that's the update. Sebastian's in some hot water down there. He might want the season to end.
Yeah. He's got to get away and make some amends here.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like a good time to go to the Keys with Gigi, you know, fly down there, find a nice sandbar to sit on, go out and stab some fish with your beak and, you know, have a romantic getaway and try to patch things up.
I did a lot of research on Sebastian. Sebastian's kind of a badass.
You?
Yeah. Manny Navarro wow. story in The Athletic. History mm-hmm. of Sebastian. He once, during the 1988 Orange Bowl, he got a small version of the Sooner Schooner because they're playing Oklahoma, and he torched it, set a fire to it. Another time he dressed up, they're playing at Florida State, he dressed up as a fireman and got a fire extinguisher, was going to try to put out the flaming spear of Chief Osceola. And he was detained by the Leon County police. Was not charged. Mm. Yeah.
Here, again, when you go into the visiting stadium, be careful what you do.
Yep. He got attacked. In 1992, a drunk Iowa fan attacked Sebastian on the field shortly before halftime of a 24-7 victory at Kinnick Stadium. Is there any other kind of Iowa fan? The fan did so after devoted Hawkeye fan and comedian Tom Arnold offered the man $800 if he would dare to beat up Miami's mascot.
Wow. Come on now. Really?
Wow.
It was a rough year wow. for me. This guy who played at Sebastian that year. I also got attacked at Syracuse and Virginia Tech. People hated the Canes back then.
Yeah.
He also...
Apparently they still do. CFP committee.
Yeah.
Clearly. They hate him.
He was walking down Canal Street in New Orleans during a Sugar Bowl against Alabama, like the week of, and he got hit by a stray bullet.
Whoa. That can happen in New Orleans.
He got 11 stitches.
That I wonder was that the Sugar Bowl when Alabama famously upset them and kicked their ass for the national title?
Yeah.
See, that was a rough week for Miami.
He told reporters, "It's going to take more than a bullet to the head to keep me out of this game." So he's kind of a bad boy, and maybe that's what Gigi likes. I don't know. Seems like they made amends in the photos. We wish the couple well, and I'm sure Ashley wishes it's never. Although she's the one who brought it up. So,
yep.
I think that should conclude our follow up.
That should conclude our bonus pod.
Should conclude our bonus pod. Hope you all enjoyed it. We're going to talk all of the games in the next episode. All 9 conference championship games this weekend. So appreciate you listening. A lot of interest in the pod and college football this week. Thanks for sharing us on social media. We will talk to you later.